Well, welcome to the Horsepower Podcast, the official podcast of the Calgary Stampeders, with your host, yours truly, Stamps TV host and sideline reporter Alana Nolan, alongside Stamps digital content producer Paul Maudsley. Paul, I guess we did something right, because they're having us back for episode two.
I mean, Alana, it's amazing to be back. They didn't cancel us, so that's a win. And another win is having our head coach on the pod today.
That's right. We had some great insights from Bo Levi Mitchell in episode one, and I'm sure there's going to be even more from our exceptional guest, Dave. Dave, joining us now, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to follow Bo, though. He is definitely media savvy. He got some good tidbits, so I'm going to work on, maybe I'll come up with some interesting things.
Well, I'm not sure if you had a chance to tune into our first episode with Bo, but he had some glowing compliments about you as a coach and the positives of having a former quarterback so close at hand. What are your thoughts on that quarterback room and the amount of knowledge it holds?
Well, yeah, ever since I've been came back in 2008, I mean, worked with some great people. You know, the first room we had, obviously, I had never worked with Henry, played with him, but enjoyed coaching Henry. And then we've had a bit of turnover. You know, we got with Drew Tate and Kevin Glenn and a few other guys from week to week. But when Bo moved in, and he's been that, I guess, stable man for, I would say, what, seven plus years. I enjoy, obviously, the banter back and forth. You know, the main thing that hasn't changed is his production. And then, you know, having Huff as a resource, you know, I do feel we've been kind of spoiled because the generations are kind of like Huff's had his generation and a lot of things are good from that. I got kind of the middle generation, and then you're working with these young men that also are very smart. Today's athlete doesn't come in naive, and they have their own great coaches and they've been taught well. And so it's always good to kind of mix and match the three mindsets and try to come to a common goal.
Awesome. Well, speaking of quarterbacks, Dave, you know, I've always been told quarterbacks are, you know, some of the smartest guys on the team and generally have a really good memory. You know, there's lots of plays to learn, all the different schemes, you know, learning defenses as well. And so I wanted to start off with something fun today with you. I want to play a little bit of a memory game, see if we can test you on noggin today.
Yeah, okay. So you're gonna, it's like a concussion test.
Oh, no.
For me, it is. Trust me, I've had to go through many of these. Before I stop you, though, Paul, when you say you've always heard quarterbacks are the smartest in the room, are you hearing that from other quarterbacks?
Maybe. But, you know, just generally, they have to know everything. Not that they are the smartest guys in the room, but just some of them. You know, they got to be knowledgeable. But what I want to do today is I'm going to give you a few dates, and we're going to see if you can pinpoint what happened on that date in your career and maybe tell us a bit about it.
Okay, I certainly give it a shot.
All right, I can give you hints if needed, but we'll start with the first one here, which is February 4th, 2009.
I would expect that would be when I retired, somewhere in that range, because nothing else happened for me in 2009. Weird thing is I didn't know if I was going to get into coaching. I actually thought maybe not, but you know, Huff and George Cortez were kind of the two on the staff at that point that were the offensive guys, and they offered me a running back job later in May, and the rest is history. But yeah, that's you never, to be honest, it's not a great date in my memory. I kind of wish it would have went differently, as far as I hated to have to retire maybe on someone else's terms, but that's just the way it goes probably 98% of the time.
Right. Well, you got it correct. That is the retirement date. And let's hit number two, which is July 1st, 2016.
July 1st, 2016. That's probably my first head coaching win.
It's correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know the score?
I know we played Winnipeg. We just had given away a game against BC, which we never should have lost, against my former boss, Wally Buono. And I'm going to say we were pretty explosive, 34-38. 2017, somewhere in there. We beat them pretty good. I would say at least a 2-touchdown win for us. What do you got?
It was a 36-22 win over Winnipeg.
Okay. Something in that 2-touchdown range, I remember. Canadian scores are always weird. You know, you don't hear a lot of 36s and 22s in college or NFL. But yeah, that was I do remember we looked extremely explosive, fast, and you know, you always question whether you're going to get that first one. I remember just talking, you know, I felt like it was needed. You don't want to get into a hole before you can't get out of it.
Well, you mentioned that one came after the game against BC. That was a tie, I believe. Or no, there was a tie against Ottawa that year.
We lost 20-19, I believe, against BC. It's funny how I remember the losses more than the wins.
But that season was good. It was a big run after that. But let's head to the next date, and it's August 20th, 2015.
Ooh, August 20th, 2015.
This is a little more tricky.
I'm going to say maybe a CFL Hall of Fame game in Saskatchewan. We won 34-31. Wanted that game big time, if that's the one. Is that the one, Paul?
I don't have it as the game, but I have it as when you were inducted into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Well, see, I had a decent weekend, but I was, you know, in the middle of a run there, wanted to win, and so we kind of had, I flew out a day or two early to Saskatoon and had a good night up there, and then was shuttled down to Regina for the game. You know, wasn't able to do the halftime and do those type of things, which is kind of, you know, it's too bad, because how many times is this going to happen? Not very often. And, you know, you like to, I really didn't feel, you know, like I was able to get in maybe with the class of that year, just because I wasn't able to partake in as much of the activities and the fun. But see, when things like that to me happen, like to me, it's still about the game. It's about football. And I really, you know, wanted to win that game. I wanted that weekend to stand out for me for more than just the Hall of Fame. I wanted to go out there and beat the Riders, which is as enjoyable as anything.
Well, one memory I'm sure you're holding dear is the 2018 Grey Cup victory, your first championship win as a head coach. Now that some time has passed between now and then, how do you feel about it now, and has it changed at all for you?
I'd like to get another one, Alana. I mean, I feel like there was a huge amount of pressure on our team. You know, being in Calgary and all of, you know, we know our roster, we know our players, but if you watch that game, which a lot of us probably have with so much free time in the last year and a half or year plus, and it comes on a loop, most of that team is gone. And I knew it was close. I felt really, really horrible after 2017. You know, we had Dan Fetter, Kyle, Rob Cote, some longtime Stamps, Jaron Mayo, that I knew their careers were over. And man, that I thought we were the best team by far. I thought we played well. I thought we had a good plan. Just the game was very cruel in 2017. So coming into 2018 in the playoffs, I probably felt the most pressure I've ever felt. You know, I was so anxious just for the games to start. And yet when the Grey Cup happened, I felt a bit of peace. You know, when it kind of started and felt like, you know, there's a great opportunity in front of us. And was it a great game? Probably not. I mean, the turf was as bad as I've ever been a part of. And it kind of seemed like it had a major impact on the offenses. But still, our guys, you know, in my opinion, we were in control of that game the entire time. And not only did it feel good, it was a huge relief. You know, I don't know, like after the game, it's not like I was just ecstatic. It was more about, man, I'm so happy that this group of men was able to stay together for a championship. Because, you know, you guys know as years go on, you're okay, let's bring back the so-and-so championship team. They don't bring back the Grey Cup runner-up. You know, that team doesn't get honored. You know, in 2016, maybe been as good a year as we had, as good a team as we had, and no one will remember it, unfortunately, because we couldn't get the job done. And 2017 was another good squad. But you look at our roster in 2018, we knew we were going to have a lot of turnover. We did. So it was good to finally get the job done.
Going back to the field conditions in that game, how much of the playbook did you throw out after you realized what you're dealing with?
Yeah, I both threw a pick on it was like a deep in route, and Chris Matthews was supposed to cross the face of the high defender, and he just couldn't do it. He slipped, so at that point I realized I got to be more cautious. I've got to probably about 70%. That's crazy, but that's the truth. And then I also realized that the defense we were going to go against was also impacted, and they were probably going to have to play zone. The reason zone's easier is you kind of just wait and you see where it's going and then you converge on it. Whereas man to man, if one guy slips and falls, there's no one that can kind of recover for him. So I knew the defensive coordinator would have to call more zone, and that way that has to then contract your playbook as well. So it wasn't a fancy game plan, but I think it still was effective. You know, we didn't hit the big chunks, which are kind of famous for us. Bo's always had great luck with some hitting some chunk plays, but we dialed up some screen passes. Obviously, the first one to Don Jackson for the touchdown was a one, and then we probably, you know, we were a bit more conservative, even in any sort of a rollout or move in the pocket type of mode, because we just didn't feel like the quarterback would have his feet under him. So it was a different game to call, equal for both sides. But yeah, it's unfortunate that we weren't able, both sides, maybe to come up with a few more of our fancy, you know, more dynamic plays.
Dave, I mean, just, you know, thinking about your career as a whole, I mean, you've coached and played with so many great quarterbacks in your life. Is there, I don't want to make you come out and say which one is the best that you've ever coached or played with, but maybe, you know, which one do you think, you know, kind of stands above the rest, or is there one, or is it just sort of like, you know, in different ways, like one was the best teammate, one was the best in terms of, you know, chunk plays, like you're mentioning with Bo or something along those lines?
Yeah. Well, I'll kind of go through my career a little bit, if you'll indulge me. Early on, Jeff Garcia, as tough and as competitive as a man as you'll ever find. You know, skill-wise, you know, I think other quarterbacks could have been similar, but you won't find a guy that is as tough and competitive as Jeff. You know, then down in the States, you know, I did have that couple of years with some good players, but I spent more time with Doug Flutie and Drew Brees, and ultra competitive as well. In fact, Doug was hilarious, you know, because we'd go golfing and Drew and I were pretty good, and Doug was solid, but he couldn't beat us. Pretty soon he's getting lessons, and he's going to try these new shots because he doesn't like to necessarily not be on top of whatever. But I kind of feel like Drew was the most confident man I've ever been around. It, he just had an inner belief, and it wasn't going to change. It was never going to change. You know, some guys give that opinion that they're confident, but it's not necessarily quite in the soul. There's nobody that I've ever been around that believed he was going to do well, and there was nobody stopping him than Drew Brees. Coming back, you know, I do feel like the years I had with Henry, nobody could spit out a play like Henry. Nobody could take that whole call and easily communicate it. He's just, you know, he's got that personality, and he's gravitating, and he backed it up with some great play through the years. I think Bo is the most talented CFL quarterback I've played with, though. I think he's, if you look at the guys that I would stack him up against, I didn't play with Doug Flutie in CFL, but I think Bo's up there with the rest of them. I think Doug's one, and I think you got to put Bo up there with the rest of all the other greats. And he's still got, in my opinion, at least 3, 4, 5 more good years. So he can make a push at it. I just think that what he's done up here has been special. And he continues the level of play. And you got to remember, I'm a coach that calls plays to win. And I mean, if we wanted just to build up huge stats, we could do that. But I pull the reins in many, many, many games to make sure Bo's healthy and to make sure that we win. And that means, you know, settling for field goals, not calling lots of passes late in the game, substituting personnel grouping so that the clock runs more, just stuff that people probably don't realize. We haven't been behind in a lot of games, so a lot of your best stats come from when you're behind. I know mine did, and yet Bo's numbers and what he's done are, to me, extremely, extremely rare, and his winning percentage is off the charts. So those would be the guys that probably you're interested in as well, and it's certainly been a blessing. And, you know, as football marches on, you're always looking for that next guy. And we do take pride in developing young guys. Sometimes we develop them for other teams, but certainly you're always looking for that next one. And I like our group this year. We got 4 young kids, I mean, kids, young men, but pretty raw and anxious to see where those four guys can push Bo and make us a better team.
We'll get to that a little bit later, but earlier on we talked about your Hall of Fame induction. The class of 2021 was recently announced with three Stampeders getting the call. So Dave, what are your thoughts on Nick Lewis, Will Johnson, and Doug Mitchell heading to the Hall?
I was able to text Nick this morning, just a quick congratulations. I got Will on Facebook. I just don't get on Facebook much, so I'll try to figure out my password and get on there. And I thought Will was underrated, by the way. I only played a year with him, and then he went to SAS and hurt his knee. But, man, he was good. Underrated guy. I thought probably should have got in earlier, but happy for Will. Nick, to me, is a foregone conclusion. I mean, the guy is special. And there's just – he just played the game with such love, and not a lot of guys like Nick in the world. So congratulations. And then Doug, you know, to be honest, I've gotten to know Doug better through charity events, through his wife Lois, and just good people and people that really care about humanity in general. You know, I know his son's over in Hamilton, so he's torn a little bit. Certainly when you love football, to me it doesn't mean you have to always be on the same team. I got the same issues as my brother in Saskatchewan, but I'm happy for Doug. And I do think, you know, Lois has kind of taken over the reins as the famous one in that family. And it's good to see Doug get some love. It's good for Doug to get recognized for all the great work he's been doing through the years.
Speaking of Hall of Fame classes, not only are you a member of the Canadian Football Hall of Fame, but you are a member of the College Football Hall of Fame down south. I wanted to talk about that just for a minute. Just your entire career in Montana was pretty special. I mean, you had a championship in there, Walter Payton Award. Your jersey got retired. I watched a video just the other day from when you were there getting to watch the Grizz play after all that stuff. And then I saw some footage from the ceremony where you got to go into the College Football Hall of Fame alongside, you know, some guys that for me are some of my favorite football players when I was a kid, and Calvin Johnson, Ed Reed. Like, how cool is that entire thing for you?
Well, I mean, I don't think I'm going to get into the other Hall of Fame, which is the NFL Hall of Fame. So this is probably my
close
last
though.
Shot. No, that one's not going to happen. You know what? I was emotional down there because I didn't necessarily feel like I fit in with those guys. And you're right, Paul. I watched those guys and I realized they're definitely way better football players than I ever was. And it just seemed like I was I wanted it probably more than anything else, as far as, because I felt like at Montana we had done some special things, and I knew the NCAA was in the business of trying to, you know, give the smaller schools some love as well. And I thought, you know what, I stack up pretty good against some of these guys. Kind of felt like that was my best football, to be honest. Even though in the pros I was kind of in and out injuries, college I was able to kind of keep it going on a consistent basis and do some things that other guys hadn't done. And so I certainly, when I got there, I was overwhelmed first off. And I felt like, you know, I'm not sure that I fit into these guys even know who I am. And do they have any clue, you know, about college football at Missoula, Montana? What I found is they did, and they were great people and enjoyed watching, you know, they're like, man, Dave, that's nice play. Or man, you had a lot of hair back then. Just good comments. I sat with Dana Barrow and Kerry Collins because our names were close in there. And Calvin was just on my other side as well. And Dana Howard, by the way, I got to get that right. I get the guys confused all the time. But anyway, it was certainly a good time. Cool to be with, like, you know, Archie Manning's there, Roger Staubach's there. You kind of see people's true colors too, and who you know, I think is grounded a little bit. I felt like it was fun to have, you know, Charles Woods and Ed Reed, Calvin Johnson. To me, that's probably the biggest names, and yet they were very grounded people. In fact, Ed Reed, Paul, you should take, he is an amazing man and just as genuine, as real as they come. So, you know, that's the sort of stuff, you know, you think about the University of Miami, and it was kind of crazy times back then. And yet you meet this guy, and to me, I think he, not that I've tried, but I think he'd still take a call from me, and he would enjoy the conversation And anyway, it was a great experience. I'm so glad it happened before COVID. To miss that would have been tragic in my mind. I mean, I know it's probably obviously once in a lifetime, but, you know, pretty good age for my son. Champ Bailey was down there as well, getting inducted into the Bowl Games Hall of Fame. So we ran into him. My daughter obviously enjoyed the trip as well, just the atmosphere. We checked out some NBA games and saw the history with the Olympics and where the bomb in Atlanta was, and just kind of it was us a chance to get into the South a little bit and talk over some things there. And a slower pace, so the wife and I were able to actually kind of, you know, just take it all in and enjoy it. So it was really a fun trip.
Awesome. Between, you know, all the different awards and, you know, fun things like the College Football Hall of Fame, you know, the CFL Hall of Fame, all those different things throughout your entire career, I'm sure over time you've amassed a significant amount of memorabilia, and we can see some of it in the background right now. Do you have any sort of like favorite thing or a few things that you just have kept from your career that are just those things that you will always cherish?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a Walter Payton Award. I don't think you can see it, but it's basically a bust of him. That to me is special. I really believe that obviously. So when I won the Walter Payton Award in previous years, they would go to New York and you would be part of the ceremony with the Heisman. And that actually did not happen. My year, and I was thinking, man, the guy from Montana wins and all of a sudden they don't want to send you to New York. And about you know, but Walter wrote me a letter and it was nice. And then about 6 months later he died, and then I didn't realize he was so sick. And this was certainly something that I was a huge fan growing up. I was a Dallas guy, you know, I was more of like Drew Pearson, Tony Dorsett, Roger Staubach, but you couldn't deny it. The way he played was always fun to watch. So that to me is something I love. You know, when I came to Canada, I used to play in a lot of charity golf tournaments and they were always for free. And so you'd always, you know, feel like I need to support this cause and charity. And so I got a bunch of stuff in my house here that I didn't have a lot of, I don't really know much about, but I did buy 4 Wayne Gretzky signed pucks and they're all labeled with the teams that he played for. So as an American, obviously we all knew Wayne. So that cost me though. That was a big ticket. That was a tough sell when I got home and I told the wife, hey, I bought 4 pucks for, let's not go with the dollar amount. And
too much.
But here it is. It's sitting here. Shoot, I don't know where the money goes anyway sometimes. So you might as well have something to look at. And then the last thing I think that I think is kind of cool. My dad's a baseball nut and I got a Ted Williams autographed stencil picture back in the 70s. And it's, you know, I didn't take good enough care of it probably. But I feel like that is, you know, if anybody in the way back years in 1940s, you know, you grew up, your dad and your mom, they kind of teach you who their idols were. And for my dad, he was always into baseball, which was kind of that generation. And you know, to get get one of the best hitters, if not the best of all time, it's just fun. And my kids really aren't into autographs too much. The it's funny, and maybe my generation is a little more. But the other things, you know, like personally, like Drew Brees gave me a ball signed with a, you know, Dave, you're a good teammate, be well, you know, stuff like a little message on there, and I didn't ask for it. You know, he sent it to me. What I was trying to do was come up with some stuff to donate to charities and auctions. And he just gave me a ball as well. So those are things that I think you can see that one right there. Those are things that I keep obviously close to my heart. And they're fun. They're fun to reminisce on past experiences and look back on history. And that's why we play, by the way, guys. That's, I always tell them, if you can be part of history, your legacy is what's going to carry on past you. Not only are you a good player, try to be a good person to make an impact on other people. And certainly those are the guys I try to surround myself with.
Well, speaking of making an impact, you coached at the amateur level in 2020, giving you an opportunity to stay in the game and exercise those coaching muscles, as well as spend some time with your sons. So tell us what that was like.
Yeah, you came by. It was fun. Yeah, it was funny. I actually had a little bit of nerves even the first game. My son was so he was in second year of Bantam, but he only weighed about 85 pounds. Oh, maybe 90. No, about 85 pounds, 80, 90. And so he, I felt like I could use him, but I needed to be a little safe and be cautious. And I felt like as a coach, that was good that I would be able to call plays and take advantage of strengths, not only of my son Cooper, but of other players, and try to put him in situations where they could excel, but not put him into a dangerous situation. You know, because when you coach, basically these are 13, 14 year olds. Essentially, they're starting to become men, but there's just such a gap between maturity and testosterone. So yeah, to me, it was a real tough level to kind of make sure everybody could compete and get playing time. But, you know, I didn't need, necessarily a guy getting crushed on kickoff or something, and a bigger kid running down with 30 yards head start and just take him out. So we had a good little squad. We played 9-on-9. So we altered our offense. I'd never obviously coached 9-on-9, but I got on a program called Huddle, which is not what we use, but I was able to coach the kids and learn some technology and draw plays. And, you know, it was really a positive experience. I'm with the Wildcats organization. And, just honestly, it was more than anything. They kind of opened their arms for me, which was great. I wasn't sure how it would go. You know, I don't want to step on toes either. Greg Wilson's been there for a bunch of years doing a great job. So it was important for me to fit in, but with the two different teams, I was able to kind of take one and run with it. And we were dominant. We had a kid named Ben Falkowski that was as good as anybody in the league, and very great sportsmanship. And we had lots of guys that we were fast, we were undersized, we were small. We took advantage of the big field and less people. And really, you know, we got through it too. That was important. A lot of sports these days even aren't getting through it. So we made the best of it. I really enjoyed it. I'm not planning on coaching this year, though. So I'd like to be coaching at McMahon. And so I took what I could and really enjoyed it. And it'll be a part of me that I think, obviously, I'll look back on. It was a good 3 months. It was fun to be a part of those young men and have your son grow and become a leader. And they ended up, you know, for me, it was one of the top three quarterbacks in the league. And that came from a kid and didn't even play the year before. So I was pretty happy to be part of that and see some growth out of the whole team, but especially my son, Cooper.
Was your competitive drive still intact?
Oh yeah. To the point, one time I complained to the refs and I thought, oh man, I shouldn't do that. I told him, I said, you know, you guys no one's here to watch you. So just keep your flags in your pockets, let the kids play. And probably a little bit over the line there, but
I've heard you say similar things.
Yeah, I know. I kind of forget. It was fun though, you know, and we took it serious, but not to the point, you know, we definitely wanted to win, but everyone got in every single game. You know, we like you said, you have to be careful in certain situations and how to play certain guys. But the competitive juice were there, and we had a chance to play the last game of the year. We were supposed to play another undefeated team, and that team had to shut it down for COVID reasons. And anyway, they ended up kind of having an unofficial championship. It was Stamps Red versus Bulldogs. I can't remember who won. It was 9-3 final. They were both undefeated. And then the Wildcats Orange, which was us, were undefeated. And we wanted a piece of them, but we weren't able to play those guys. So that's probably the only regret. I would have liked to seen us play the best and see where we stacked up. But certainly competitive juices were alive, and it was fun.
Dave, regardless of the level that you're coaching, whether it's your son and kids of that age or you know, a bunch of grown men, what to you is the best part of coaching?
Relationships. And I like designing stuff and then seeing if it'll work. There's nothing better than, you know, putting something on a piece of paper and practicing it, but you're not really sure it's going to work or the timing. And then when it just works to a T. I mean, we had all these trick plays in. I had a double pass. I had a throwback to the quarterback. We had an onside kick. I mean, we had more trick stuff, fake field goals. And I didn't run them much until the last game of the year because we were winning by so much. So I didn't want to be that guy that was like rubbing it in on people. So the last game of the year, we played a good, solid, tough team, Airdrie Black. And we just called everything. I just said, screw it from the beginning. And some worked, some didn't. But it is really fun to see something that maybe you haven't seen done at that level or in that game. And you put it on a piece of paper and it just works to a T. But the best thing is to see the enjoyment from players and whatever age they are to understand when they put in all the hard work, the effort, the time, the sacrifice, what I call investment too. They invest a lot. They need some return on that investment. And it's so fun when it actually works the way it's supposed to and you can come out of there and win in your last game. So long answer there, Paul, but certainly, yeah, that's what I enjoy the most.
Oh, you mentioned designing plays, and last time we talked to Bo, he was mentioning that you were probably holed up somewhere designing a whole bunch of stuff for the season and trying to maybe, you know, have the other coaches were trying to restrain you from doing too much and changing too much from the playbook. He mentioned maybe you'd try him at receiver. I'm not sure Bo would fit great there, but, you know, maybe.
Bo can catch. I don't know if we can get him. He's got to get past the line of scrimmage, though. So I have had time, as all coaches have. What's interesting is the football we've been watching has been more U.S.-based. There hasn't been Canadian football. We do steal from college. We steal from other CFL teams. You know, but lately, obviously, we had a chance probably to do more NFL film than we ever have. So there's some ideas there and some things that we think we can morph to our game, but don't know if they're going to work. That's what's kind of fun. And that's why we need to get out on the field, even practice. Even if it works in practice, you got a pretty good idea it's probably going to work in the game. And we'll try some new things. But the one thing in all this talking, you know, with Canadian game, U.S. game, and I want to stress the Canadian game, one of the great parts is the flexibility that the unlimited motion gives us. You know, we can have moving people all over the place, and yet we hope to know where we're supposed to end up on the snap. And by that flexibility, it gives us coaches way more opportunity to be creative and we can try things, you know, things that haven't been done and you haven't seen at other levels. So I really enjoy the rules of our game. And like I said, the unlimited motion is just something that I believe adds so much excitement. It's a part of our game that I think kind of puts it on another level.
Well, for many years, you've put on the Dave Dickinson Passing Academy. This year obviously looked a little bit different. What were the challenges of coaching kids virtually in a pandemic?
Yeah, so I appreciate you bringing that up, Alana, because we had a tough year like everybody. We didn't do it at McMahon at the Viper Dome, but we were able to put together four free sessions for kids. We opened it up basically to anybody who wanted to register. And it unfortunately probably didn't get out to a lot of kids, didn't know about it, but we did our best. And, you know, I know I tried to basically show kids and young men, teach them something, but also entertain them at the same time. And that's not always as easy for me. I can get entertained just watching a football game and talking strategy and, hey, check this out. Wow, what a play. I'm not always sure that kids, especially since they've been on Zoom calls all day for school, wanted to add another 2 hours in the evening. But we did our best to be, you know, I made some drawings that I'd show the kids the plays and how we want to read them out and what defense to look to attack. And then I'd actually show the game footage. And then we got into watching a few games. And what I think the young men realize is, you know, we get this in our mind that, you know, Bo is the best quarterback in our league, but guess what? He still makes mistakes as a head coach. I still make mistakes. I even admitted to him, this is a bad call. Shouldn't have called it in this situation. But I think it kind of made everything a little more real to the young men. And I try to make it interactive, difficult with 80, 100 kids on a call. But I think we made the best of it. And we at least gave them some value. We at least showed them that we care about them. We care about football, and we hope to, you know, be able to get back and do it in person coming up in basically January of this upcoming year. So that's what we did. It was not perfect, but certainly it was better than nothing.
All right, Dave. Well, now's the time. We're going to look forward to the hopeful 2021 CFL season and the new look Stampeders, as it were. I mean, there's plenty of returning guys on the roster, but there's been a lot of departures in terms of free agents and a lot of retirements, including Riley Jones yesterday. With the roster the way it's looking, what gets you excited for this season?
I think it's the freshness, the newness of not knowing, you know, a lot of these guys is, you know, I haven't really seen them. They could walk in and I'd have to check who they were. I think it's fun because I personally feel we're probably a team. We've always had high expectations for ourselves, but I don't think the country or the CFL is going to look at the Calgary Stampeders and our roster and say, wow, look at that squad. In fact, I looked at a deal yesterday on one of the websites that had the rankings of position groups, and the only one we even made a dent on was quarterback, and you know why. So that to me can be exciting, though, because we're young, we're new, we don't know who we are, so what can we grow into? What can we become? Can we, you know, do something special and show people that we're still a team to be reckoned with? Might take a little bit of time. You know, CFL season in general allows that to happen. But, you know, we've always started so fast and had high expectations early. Now this year, I feel like most people, you know, might put us in the middle of the pack, if not the bottom. And that motivates me to try to, you know, show people we're excited about our players. We've got skill. You just don't know them yet. We'll show you that we'll show up and be prepared, and we'll play good winning football. And, you know, as what I'd like to think, Paul, is that we could keep these guys together for more than a year and build and grow. That's how the dynasty started. That's how it always came about, is that we found good young players and we kept adding to those, to the team, without losing our major pieces. And then, you know, after 2018, it's been tough. I mean, we lost a lot of our stalwarts, guys that have been here for a long time through retirement, free agency, or sometimes, unfortunately, even us. We had to make some very tough decisions on our roster and lost some guys that I consider will be all-time stamps. And, you know, Eric Rogers, Cordero Law, those are just guys that are always going to be part of who I remember as Calgary Stampeders. So, but we made tough decisions. We realized it was time for us to try to get younger and give these young guys a chance to break through on the roster and become special. So, you know, we'll see. I do think this year, when we get rolling, training camp, hopefully preseason, all that's going to be more important than ever. We're not a team that has veterans. So we need to find out who we are, and we need to find out as coaches how to use these guys to make sure we're successful.
And obviously that first game back will be circled on the calendar, but there's a few other games that'll probably get circled for you, and that is the Dickinson Bowl, you versus Craig, or Calgary versus Saskatchewan, however you want to look at it. How important are those games for you on the schedule? Just obviously it's a division rival, but it's kind of special getting to coach against your brother.
It was great for him, and he did an outstanding job in a weird situation, you know, with Chris Jones basically moving on right before the season. He was ready. I mean, I knew he could be a good head coach, but you never know if the – doesn't mean you're not doing a good job necessarily, even if it doesn't go your way. I mean, you are, in my opinion, coaching is very overrated. You usually get in the way more than you help. You want to put your players in a good position to win, and then the players win and lose the games. And you can, like you said, help, but you can also sometimes just, you know, be a roadblock. So I was very impressed by what Craig did in Saskatchewan. Obviously they have a good team and they're a well-run team, but I did enjoy beating them. And last year we had we were undefeated versus them. So if we can continue to do that, that would be great, Paul, but I know at some point he'll have his way with us. I'll go shake his hand, tell him good job, and then try to figure out a way that doesn't happen the next time. But proud of him. You know, he's just a good person. You guys know him too. And he's waited his turn. You know, being a quarterback and a player, I got things easier than he did. You know, I get the next promotion. I'm always on a little bit of a fast track. And there's coaches on our staff too, great coaches that have to wait their turn. And when those guys get their turn, it's exciting to see what they do with it. And obviously, Mark Kellen's a great example. He waited until my brother went to the NFL, and then he got his chance and doing a great job. And Brent Monson, you know, behind Devon there, and Devon moved on. And I didn't realize quite what I had until I saw him take over that defensive group and excel. Pat Delmonico is going to be my new offensive coordinator. And I've learned I got to delegate a little bit, and I've seen him run with it, doing a great job organizing things and getting our staff ready to go. So as coaches, you love to see that development. And as a brother, you certainly, it's exciting for me to see his potential and see what he's been able to do. And at some point, it'd be awesome to work together. But then again, you know, you can get fired together too. So it's certainly, I've learned from the Sutters and some of the other brother combinations through the years, sometimes it's best to kind of do your own thing and then meet up for the holidays.
Yeah, and I know over the years since you've come to Canada, not only have you, you know, done a lot in football, but you've started to maybe fall in love with another sport, and that's hockey. I know you've participated in some of the companies, different tournaments and games that we play in. But what is it? I mean, I've heard you're pretty good at hockey too. Some people have told me that. So you're a little intense on the bench, maybe. What is it about hockey that you've seemed to enjoy?
Well, I figured when I would move to Canada full time, I mean, come on, you got to learn the sport that basically still always has and drives our country. And so I didn't skate much, and I'm gonna pull back. I'm not a good hockey player, but I still tell people what to do. That's just maybe my know-it-all attitude. Hey, let's go get off the ice. That's too long a shift. Get your butt
up. Coach your heart.
Do like it though. I enjoyed watching my son. We played here out here at Springbank, and God, I just loved watching the kids. It just seemed like it got better and better. And we did not take it overly serious. We never did power skating. We just had fun. It's tough to do in the hockey city. It's tough for just to let these kids have fun and just let them grow. But he's now moved on to basketball. But for me, hockey, a lot of similarities to basketball, which you may not know, Paul Milan. That was my favorite sport growing up. I love basketball. But hockey, to me, is a fast version of that. Same passing lanes. You can still cycle. Yeah, you don't really get away with the full picks. But I just love it. And I understand, in my opinion, like same thing, hockey and basketball. A lot of good players, but that one special player can take over a game. And I don't know if that's the case in football. In fact, I don't think it is. I don't think you'll ever win with just one guy. You know, you saw what, you know, Patrick Mahomes this year, he was running for his life, just ain't happening. Where I've seen in basketball, certain guys that seem to take over a game. I've seen in hockey, maybe a goalie takes over a game, or I watch McDavid play. It's just insane how good he is. Always enjoyed learning new sports. Really, you know, for my body, hockey's been okay because it's more of a gliding action, and I've had tough knees and got a hip injury at the present moment. So that's certainly something that I'm working on, but it's just fun to me interact. It is, to me, there's no reason why the people don't play it till they're 60, 70. You can do it. It's not that we have to be overly competitive, but it is fun to still get a little bit of, try to make a nice pass, a nice shot. Not interested in anyone checking me or getting checked. So I think it's been fun for our group. And, you know, you learn more about people through sports. I cross-checked Mark Mueller from behind one time. He still hasn't forgiven me. So, you know. Lucky I'm his boss. If he was my boss, or if I was his employee, he might have let me go after that double double hand across the lower back. But
so that's how he got still the promotion.
Talks to me. He still talks to me, which is nice.
Last question for today, Dave. The Masters just wrapped up. I know you're a big golf fan. What are your thoughts on this year's tournament and any special memories from the Masters when you visited Augusta?
Yeah, I went for my 40th birthday, and I'm hoping to go back at some point, maybe 50. It's coming up pretty soon. Love, because it's played on the same course every year, to me, that's special. I mean, I know, like, I actually enjoy watching, it's called the Farmers Classic now. It's in San Diego because I played Torrey Pines. And so now I start thinking, like, oh, yeah, I bombed it over the corner there. I made birdie on that hole. Never played Augusta, never will, I'm pretty sure, but it was so fun to walk the grounds. And, you know, this year's tournament, I thought it lacked a little any of the drama. Obviously, Hideki kind of took over. He did open the door. He opened the door, and nobody was able to get through it. You know, but it was at least in doubt up until 16 there. But I think with most people, if you like golf, if you got the cash and you can do it, everyone I've talked to that's been to Augusta and watched the Masters tournament live has not been disappointed. It's probably better than what you think it's going to be. And I'm with you. I love watching it. You know, it's the one sport, like you said, it is nice to have the fans, but it's a TV sport as well. And so we've been able to stay on top of most tournaments, and they've been pretty COVID free as far as the players. And yeah, I don't know what it meant to Japan. I've never been there. I don't know if you guys have, but I have a feeling, you know, they didn't oversell that portion that it meant so much to a country, because it is big time. To me, it's the premier golf event. And, you know, we're trying to make football a global sport. And you can see what global popularity can do for a sport. And if you can get the right guy in there to kind of give you success. So, you know, hopefully CFL, we get that same model, and we get the world watching us and having some great events like you just saw at the Masters.
Dave, you mentioned going to the Masters. Do you have a preference of you know, following one golfer or sticking at a hole, or do you kind of just wander throughout?
I like to walk. I'm not much for sitting at a hole. I mean, first off, you know, your negative on that is if you sit at a hole, you might get a better spot because if you just track him. But I like to walk the course. I actually, you know, we were there 2 days. I was with my college roommate, Eric Simonson, is his name, and we got views of every hole except for 11. And we got 11 with the green, but it's very tucked. It's tucked away. It's hard. You don't see many people. You can't see the fairway and the tee shot, but you can see it coming in on Amen corner there. So we watched that. But I mean, I walked the whole front nine, spent a little bit of time on five because nobody wanted to go over there. It's a long par four. And so, yeah, I could be like right with the golfers. Enjoyed that. Did like to follow certain guys. The year I was there, Dustin Johnson wasn't married yet, but Paulina Gretzky was tracking him. And so, you know, we felt kind of like we were part of the famous people. We followed them for a while. You know, he wasn't obviously quite the top rated golfer at the time, but certainly still a big name. Yeah, so I'd rather walk. But you know what? That was in my 30s. Or 40. I can see it now. You know, Augusta's super hilly. And if I went back, maybe I would try to sneak if I had like one green, I would try to get in. I think 16, the par three, I would like to be, watch that. Yeah, I like par threes, and nine is another one. Nine is an uphill second shot with this crazy green. You see some amazing shots. Those are a couple greens that I wouldn't mind parking my chair next to and watching.
More importantly, did you have one of the famous egg salad sandwiches from Augusta?
I did have egg salad. I like egg salad. I think I think it's like pimento or something like that. I mean, anyway, not happening. I'm a pretty picky, finicky eater. Like, egg salad's good, Atlanta, no doubt. And cheap. Their sandwiches are like $1.50. Mm-hmm. But just pieces of bread with cheese in the middle, no. That wasn't for me. So I'm not a big drinker or anything like that. But when you got on the grounds, the crazy part, you leave your phone, you can't bring your phone in. And everything goes back about 40 years price-wise too, until you get to the pro shop. And when you get to the pro shop and you're trying to get your memorabilia, your hats and your gear, they're not going to revert back to 1972 prices there. So, but it was fun. It was a small town. It's not much going on. My friend and I ran into like John Daly's in the parking lot of a restaurant selling autographs with his new wife. It just surreal. It's like this guy, you know, he didn't have the exemption anymore. And he's, you know, it's just weird. It was just crazy. It's for me, a lot of good memories, but also some interesting, sideshows on that we ran into.
Well, on that note, we'll wrap it up for today. Thank you for your time today, Dave. Appreciate all the insights and a glimpse into the mind of Dave Dickinson.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and we'll do it again.
Thanks for tuning in to the Horsepower Podcast.